And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not
I'm on. I made it. Donna's yelling at me. Get on. I'm here. There. Relax. See? Done. In time. Skated in, which was just like every day when we were on the road. So, you know, it's all good. The monitor's slicking real bad. Is there a reason why? God, we got button issues. Whatever. That's, go ahead and turn that off. That's a freaking annoying, man. Let's go ahead and take a look at my grandbabies. Yeah, hello. This is why it was so creepy yesterday talking to Taryn Lupo about his new book coming out. And it was called, First Blood or something. I mean, you know, it was, wow. He's going to have it out by Halloween. And it's about literally using the blood of children to prolong and enhance the life of the older generations. And it gets to the point to where, you know, just like with anything, you have the boomer bubble coming up. You need fewer kids to take care of more older people. And it's just as we talked even off air about the whole concept and some other things, and I go, you know, this reminds me of this book and this movie and this thing, and think about this and, you know, and whatever, because he's going to be doing a sequel, too. So I'm going, wow, man, this is, you know, send me a contract. I want to be the agent for the Hollywood thing, man. I'll make some calls. Because I knew some people in the industry just, you know, hey, you know, who should we take this to? What? Because this is definitely scary stuff. And it's, and nothing really scares me that much, you know, except the truth. And it's an educational thing. In that, so much of the portrayal in the book, the storyline he was giving me, these are efforts and departments of government now. Now, I mean, that's why we did that big "It's Not My Debt" billboard campaign of the babies and kids, and you know, and barcodes on their butts and whatever, saying, "Hey, it's not my debt. It's not my debt." Well, Paul Ryan thinks it is. You know, he was there. There was, I don't know if we have it up yet. I go through the news and select a lot of stuff to be put up on the site. And we have staff around the country. And I say, you know, here, put this stuff up. And one of them was Paul Ryan explaining why he was voting for the TARP, the bailout. I'm just, wow. And of course they want to use the word libertarian. And I just love when they do that. So you can just, you know, make a big deal of how they're not. This is, we're going to go over today, you know, so I can get caught up, because I, you know, with grandbabies coming and everything, I've taken a break from the news. I'm just like, you know, I'm filling my head with, you know, light and rainbows. So we'll go ahead and go over today. That's what I'll spend a lot of the time on. And during the breaks and so on, I'll just go and pick up another story, and we'll go ahead and talk about a lot of the things in the news. And it's amazing what's not in the news. We put up quite a bit of stories on this LIBOR thing.
And what it is the interest rates banks charge each other set out of London. And it stands for London interest, blah, 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 whatever. It's they, them, those regulating themselves. And I'm just amazed at how little is reported on that. We've seen other things like this before, you know, about on the bailout and, you know, all of them. You know, nobody ever reports on this stuff. And they'll get somebody up there and they'll play political football with it. And one of the people that from the Obama administration that was supposed to be keeping track of where all the money went and why and everything, you know, she's running for Congress or senator or whatever, and kind of, you know, I don't care. I mean, it's, I give you an example. There's an economic discussion group that I go to. It's been around for God, like 30 years or something, and it's a lot of smart guys, a lot of influential guys, a lot of wealthy guys that go to different groups and organizations. They want to play politics and try, and the real hardcore Austrian economics guys, you know, or, you know, there's more and more of them just, you know, not voting and kind of, you know, making a good case for it. And the discussion got in, they, you know, every now and then they want to see, you know, the Republican thing in there. Well, yeah, but, you know, we got to beat Obama. And so blah, 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 blah. That's why I'm supporting, you know, Romney, Ryan for the yada, yada. And it's been flaming back and forth for a couple of days. And I just, you know, whoa, 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 whoa. I don't even care. I'll let them go back and forth and everything. And maybe today or tomorrow when I take the time to sit down and have an opinion, I'll go ahead and detail. But I'm just, I don't know what I got to do. Now, I show them. I said, yeah, go to this part of this clip here, him begging for the whatever on this issue, him voting on this, him doing it. Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. We're so conditioned, that, and these people are people that should know better, and we're so conditioned that they are just saying, you know, we're just going to go ahead and support this guy because he's not as bad as that guy. Our guy, their guy. You know, comparative politics, lesser evils. And I am so scared that, you know, what role are these people going to play in the future? Influential, smart, educated individuals that are making the decision, actually going to go down and cast a ballot in support of a little bit different, not even less, a little bit different tyranny. I keep going back to Dr. Paul's comment about how he made the moral, the constitutional, that he's going to win this economic argument. And it's the math is so overwhelming. It's not if, it's when. You know, and it's pretty common knowledge that a lot of in the banking institutions and different leaders of, you know, flags, you know that the sovereign debt spiral has already started. And I know someone in the financial industry, you know, and you got to be careful because, you know, you don't want to out your sources. You don't want to get anybody in trouble. You don't want, you know, but they're at some point, at some time, regardless of what their public rhetoric is, there's privately, they have to be relevant in the future and at least know something about something and say something and have some facts and kind of, you know, and okay, well, here's the bullet points of propaganda, but the reality is, I mean, at some point, they have the little executive conference room meeting where the guy comes in and says, okay, well, all right, here's what the real truth is. They know. And if they don't know, they shouldn't be in those positions anyway. And that's kind of my point. I'm going, look, they're just cogs in the machine. Now, all these people that you see, their faces up on CNBC or Fox or CNN or MSNBC or whatever, they have absolutely no depth of understanding of what's going on. And no more, I used to, at least for the propaganda crap, just for the audaciousness of the stories, I go to CNBC to put some stuff, I can't even go there anymore. It's so obvious hogwash that it's just not even worthy of I'm showing how much crap it is. It's just noise. I think it's soon. We'll talk about it.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Let's see. National Libertarian Party and Judge Gray, VP candidate, along with the other guy. They want to. He's going to be here, and they want me to interview him. Is it next Wednesday? Is that what they're talking about? Tomorrow? Tomorrow. I thought tomorrow was Wednesday. No? Tomorrow was Wednesday. No, I thought today was Wednesday. All right, tomorrow's Wednesday. How are we going to talk to Judge Gray? And Gary Johnson. Yeah, that's it. I'm, yeah, sure. You know, whatever. I'm, and you're still voting. This is, I am really ambivalent about this election. I mean, I'm getting more and more so about, you know, Ron Paul's efforts, you know, dealing with the RNC way too much. Whenever there's some kind of, you know, traction, somebody's getting, you know, there's going to be a ruckus. It's kind of, man, you know, people are, they're doing everything they can to squash it. They got Jesse Benton from the campaign. Oh, no. We're not. I will not seek, nor will I accept the nomination from the GOP of all the people that busted their ass for years to be able to put me there to go kick some butt. And I'm not. No. But come to my thing so you can listen to me speak. I can't muster. I tell you, power to the people. I mean, literally, power to the people. Because this is, I'm becoming more and more. It takes me years to kind of nuzzle up to, you know, something, and then really just embrace it and run with it. And, you know, here I go, head down, plow. I'm not, you know, second guessing myself. I'm not questioning. I'm just doing. And as time has gone on, I know a lot of people that, you know, are way smarter than me, that have access to a lot more equipment than me. I mean, you know, okay, I'll walk you through it. Just, you know, just some stuff from yesterday. I'll take a sip of my coffee. This is where we're going. It's simple stuff. When you have certain kinds of electrochemical reactions, and you're making ions and blah, 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 you know, make electrons. What happens is you're going, look, all you're doing is how much surface area can I have? Well, you know, there's different manufacturing techniques. There's different, you know, materials. It's different, you know, use simple things like electroplating of this semiconductive material, the yada, 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 you can play. But one of the things is I'm looking at, I really want to take advantage of the properties of nanotubes. As I've been researching on this, yeah, they make them mostly in China. But even here, you know, they're wanting $160 a gram. I'm going, man, this stuff ain't cocaine, you know? I mean, I'm like, you know, an Uber super duper cocaine or whatever. I'm going, this is, I'm all right, it's carbon. I mean, can't this be, well, I've known for a long time, there's a couple of ways that you can make different kinds of nanotubes with different properties and so on. Well, one of them is just, you know, mass production of, is if you put it in a, let's say you got a furnace that has temperature, the ambient temperature in there is 900 degrees Celsius hot, right? Now, can you have a furnace with an atmosphere that you can control? Yes. You know, you can get a furnace with an atmosphere that you can control. It costs X amount of dollars, and you can put, it's like having a air hose connection into it, and you hook that up to a tank filled with whatever gas that you want. Well, you need an inert gas so you have an atmosphere without anything, so you don't have impurities in whatever it is that you're doing. So you don't want the nitrogen and the oxygen and the whatever from the air and the carbon dioxide, dioxide and all this other crap, you know, depending on water vapor and so on. So you heat it up, you create a vacuum. All right, now I got a hot space in there. It's 900,000 degrees Celsius. Now what? All right. Well, you lay out some, you know, I mean, as an example, something we'd test, you know, carbon fibers on there, you know, not necessarily conductive, but, you know, carbon fiber, they're not going to go anywhere. They're not going to burn anymore. It's carbon. All right. So you lay that down, all right? You want to deposit, you want to get some nanotubes going. You want to get a forest of these little tubes growing up there. So how do you do that? Well, you need carbon. All right, so you get a tank, cheap tank of carbon dioxide. All right, here we go. Carbon dioxide is like a carbon atom and two oxygen atoms. You get burn off the oxygen. You got to separate. You got to heat it off. You put it in the furnace. Oh, there goes the oxygen. Okay, now you got carbon. Well, you don't want to react with anything, so you need either a vacuum and or, you know, an inert environment. So that's where the helium comes in. Helium doesn't react with anything, or argon or neon or some other whatever is called noble gases that don't react with anything. And I tell you, you have some gases that are extremely corrosive and volatile and it's wanting to react with everything. Well, like fluorine. Fluorine, very active. You know, it has one open valence, and man, it wants to bond really bad. Well, carbon, you know, likes bonding really bad too. So if it has four valences, well, you get four fluorine atoms to one carbon, and what do you get? A fluorocarbon, Teflon. Nothing sticks to it. Why? Because it's already stuck to. All its openings, you know, on carbon is bonded with a fluoride, and I mean a fluorine, you know, atom, and then you got like a, you know, fluorocarbon, which they go, oh, no, you can't have fluorocarbons because, you know, they get broken down by blah, 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 and threaten the ozone and all that. And I say that's a lot of crap because that is, I mean, you know, one of the most bonded things anyway. So aside from that, it's called, I remember the book in the 90s, it was called A Hole in the Ozone Theory, you know, and it was, yeah, they're just scaring us. It's been going on for a long time. So I'm going, all right, well, why would they do that? Now, there's no little aside here. Here in Arizona, what they did is they had, it was 1996 campaign. It was 94 to 96. And there was a legislator named Jean McGrath. She, you know, better than most. And we got along with her fine. She even came to our Libertarian Party headquarter parties and stuff every now and then. What she did is when they made Freon illegal, you guys remember that? In mid-90s, they're going, you know, Freon is a CFC gas. It's going in holes in ozones and oh my God, and we're all going to die. So we're going to make Freon illegal. Well, the reason they did that was because DuPont had the patent on Freon for air conditioners to have the, you know, whatever coolant, all right. If you have a gas that is, one, you want it inert, so it's not reacting with a bunch of stuff, but you want it to have a low boiling point and be able to compress it, you know, into a liquid and expand it into a gas relatively easily. Well, they came up with a combination called Freon, which is a fluorocarbon, I believe. And what they were able to do with that is they were able to extract the heat from the room, make cool, because when you have the contraction, liquid to gas, liquid to gas, liquid to gas, you get air conditioning. I mean, that's how it works. But the patent was running out. So they go, oh, we can't have that. Well, they came up with a new one called Suvia. You know, this is illegal, but we got a new one to replace it with. Well, here in Arizona, it was the only place in the country that was legal to manufacture Freon. Oh, how'd that go over? I'll tell you that story when we come back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
If I remember that, let's go ahead and finish that up. Here in the mid-90s, it was a big deal, and they go, all right, we're going to have Freon made illegal, and financial motivation was that the patent on it had gone up, and they were going to go ahead and run out, and, you know, everybody and anybody can make it, and all of a sudden they're ready to do it, too, and they're going, oh, no, you can't make that. It's getting to the point now to where they don't have to worry about it anymore. There's no expiration of, I mean, Mickey Mouse is, you know, copyright protected for like ever or something. And it's just whenever you have these kind of departments of government, you know, they're always there to serve the interest of, I don't know, not you. And so when they did the Freon thing, I remember it was a big national deal. There was a party that we were invited for to at a Paradise Valley Country Club. It was called Mountain Shadows. And I think that's what it was. It was Mountain Shadows. And you go there, and they were like, yep, we're going to go to Mountain Shadows and celebrate, and had all the, you know, kind of libertarian types, and I guess. And they invited libertarians. We were like, you know, good doobies libertarians. And I could see even back then how the libertarian, keep in mind, this is the mid-90s, the libertarians, to give credence to things like this, deregulation of, they got to have a libertarian stamp of approval on it. So a lot of the well-known individuals in the libertarian movement wound up going to this thing, and we're seeing all the, you know, we knew that if the wind blew the other way or benefited them, some, they had no principle basis for this. You know, these guys were there too. And I'm just like, you know, I just had a distasteful, it wasn't a freedom thing as much as it is our guy versus them thing. So you know that there was, here comes the federal government. They're going, oh, can't have an outlier. No, 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 no. You know, the nail's sticking up. It's time for it to get pounded down. Boom. So they threaten funding of this. They do that. You know, back and forth, ouch, quit it. And eventually it kind of gets whittled away. And, you know, some people are even thinking, yeah, well, Arizona would have a new industry. It'd be rich. I mean, Arizona's, you know, they love their life support, a.k.a. air conditioning. And they're just thinking that, you know, what we'll go ahead and do is Arizona will make it to, you can manufacture. Well, at the same time, the same argument, the same issue was being applied to the assault weapons ban. When you go to the gun shows and you would be there, and there we had this, it was called Galco. I think it was G-A-L-C-O. Let me see if that comes up. Because Galco, they were a lot of the weapons they designed and used in the movie RoboCop. So you had these, you know, small, fully automatic, you know, handguns. And Galco, let me see, see if that even comes up. Because I remember they had a spiral magazine that went on top of one gun. You have 100 rounds of 22 in a handgun. And, no, Galco's holster. What was the name of that company? Anyway, it's 100 round 22. And we were going to them saying, hey, look, you know, let me tell you what the deal is, how the law, like with the Freon thing. We said, because if it's in state, and it's not, in fact, you're starting to hear this, I think it was Wisconsin or Montana or something, they passed legislation. If you manufacture a fully automatic Uber Duber, whatever gun, De La, whatever the heck, that's only used for intrastate. You know, if it's only for in the state, not to be sent outside of the state, does the federal government have jurisdiction over the manufacture, distribution, blah, 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 of handguns? Well, then they go, well, of course, they always say they do. And so they go, no, you don't. It's inside the state. We're arming ourselves, and we can, you know, and it's a printable gun. All right? Now we can do it, whatever, here. It's we can make it for ourselves, done. And that's where, you know, you start getting in. Yesterday, we had, oh, yeah, and it's Cody Wilson. You know, Donna gave me on the card, it said Cody Miller. And I just kept calling him Miller because, you know, she made me. But, you know, it's really, it's Wilson, right? Yeah, so she, I, sorry, Cody. You know, I thought your name was Miller. I, you know, I just read what's on the card. So later he sent an email, you know, talking about, you know, yay and the show and great and thanks and all that kind of stuff. And I go, Wilson, I was calling him Miller the whole time. So anyway, Donna doesn't know why that happened. But anyway, we apologize. Now, printablegun.com is part of the, I mean, it gets down to the individual and makes it all kind of moot anyway. But, you know, the point is that in the state, wherever you produce anything, the argument that the government, the federal government had made was the Commerce Clause applied whenever you have something that is interstate commerce. You know, the Commerce Clause, whenever you have something that goes between states and they want to have different regulations, whatever, fine, yeah, that's all very interesting. If we just do it ourselves for ourselves, then it's all ourselves and doesn't concern you. Well, there was a case in where you had, I was, I'm trying to think. It was like the 30s, 40s or something back then. That they had all kinds of regulation on what a farmer could produce or not produce. They were being paid for not producing. And when I was a kid, I remember traveling from, and I like didn't believe my dad. We were traveling. We used to live in Florida till I was 12. We'd travel every year or two. We'd come out for a couple week vacation, and we'd drive out to Arizona, visit my mom's side of the family in Mesa. And on the way, we're going, and I'd see fields that were had the rows really far apart, you know, or fields that weren't planted, and next to them they were and everything. And even as a kid, I'm going, well, how come they don't plant that field? Oh, the government pays them not to plant. Right. Oh, my dad's just BSing me, you know, and I'm, you know, later you find out that's exactly what was going on. So they're regulating all this. Well, this one farmer, he goes, I can't remember the name of the case. And he goes, well, you can't regulate me on what I'm doing because I am growing my own food on my land for my animals. It never leaves the farm. There is no interstate commerce. Sucks to be you. Get out of my face. I go, oh, I'm sorry. Didn't you get the memo? The very fact that you're growing this means that you're having an impact on interstate commerce because you're not buying the food over there. The fact that mere fact that you're producing it here means you don't have to buy it there. So you are having an effect on interstate commerce. You're regulated. We control. So there was another case in, I think it was Louisiana. It was a butchering. And it just goes on and on and on. And you just got to look at this stuff and go, this is, who makes this stuff up? I just saw the movie Night Before Last, Farmageddon. And it's a raw milk thing. It's the Rawson Foods and all that kind of stuff. Gary and Verda had that, and they lent it to me. I got to get back to him. That's why I wanted to watch it, because I get back to him. And so I watched the movie, and it was very, you know, it didn't tell me I didn't, you know, any major thing I didn't already know. But I tell you what it really, the heartwarming aspect of the whole thing was, is that the people get it. You know, they go through the process. They're trying to, you know, comply with the law. They're going through whatever. They think they get grandfathered. They fill out the right paperwork. And they're thinking, when you got to fill out paperwork for all this stuff, well, when you got one guy that's all their job is just comply and fill out all the paperwork, and you're a large enough and this applies to everything. You know, every industry, all kinds of manufacturing and agriculture and mining and everything. You got one guy, that's his job, is to fill out the paperwork. Well, that gives you an advantage when you can afford that one guy. You're big enough, and the economy's a scale. When you're the only guy, and you got to fill out the paperwork, you spend more time filling out paperwork than you do working and growing, which is the intent. So this is happening everywhere. Farmageddon, you know, it's a real eye-opener for a lot of the people involved. They didn't, you know, they're coming in raiding them with SWAT teams, guns drawn, because you've got your little co-op here with some raw milk, and somebody told me that I had to, and I'm doing it to keep my job. Are we at peak government yet?
Take control of your money today and do it with style. Young Austrians are right now fashioning the silver economy. Would you like to take part? You'll find all the tools you need at DontTreadOnMeme.com. Don't Tread on Meme is the only place where you can get your hands on silver dime trading cards with the most unforgettable designs, like Clint Eastwood's Fistful of Silver Dollars, Murray Rothbard, Enemy of the State, the Ron Paul Lovelution, and the cover art of George Orwell's book 1984. Download the free silver calculator app from the iPhone or Android markets and get up-to-the-minute silver spot prices at your fingertips. And hey, we're all Austrians now, so why not express your passion for silver and promote the ideas of honest money with Don't Tread on Meme's clever apparel. Boycotting Empire of Theft. Buy silver. Trade with value. Build a society of consent. Do it all at DontTreadOnMeme.com. That's DontTreadOnMeme.com.
The cells have actually been... the scientific community.
You know the U.S. dollar is devalued. You can see it happening every day. You know a new currency will take over at some point. Wouldn't you like to be in on the ground floor? Bitcoins. They're a decentralized, anonymous internet currency. They're free to use, free to accept, and free from inflation forever. You can use them anywhere in the world. Find out more at weusecoins.org. Don't be kicking yourself in the pants in a month. Your dollars are going down. Learn more about Bitcoins at weusecoins.org. That's weusecoins.org. DVD, books, music, instruments, periodicals, computers, software, electronics, photo, cell phone, office products, home and garden, bed and bath, furniture, kitchen, pet supplies, automotive, hardware, apparel, shoes, jewelry, grocery, healthcare, sports and outdoors, toys, games, used and more. It's a department store at your fingertips. Shop.lrn.fm. Get all your shopping done, get a great deal, and a portion of your purchase goes to benefit the Liberty Radio Network when you shop at Amazon via shop.lrn.fm. Why did you move to the Shire?
I moved here to the Shire because there's other people around who take liberty just as seriously as I do.
I moved to the Shire because I saw videos of people challenging authority and thought that I could get support myself. It called to me, like, do this, right now.
I wanted to be around people like me who got it, and once I got here, I knew there was nowhere else that I wanted to be.
Immigrating to the Shire was easy. I was instantly plugged into a community of individuals who also care about peace, liberty, and justice, and are willing to do something about it.
The people here are awesome, loving, and positive. It was for the adventure and for the feeling of something important is happening here, and I just wanted to come to sort of be part of that.
Visit ShireSociety.com to read and sign the Shire Society Declaration and learn the reasons why, if you love liberty, you should immigrate to the Shire. Plus, add yourself to the Shire map at ShireSociety.com. That's ShireSociety.com.
This is the Liberty Radio Network, broadcasting the latest liberty-oriented audio content 24 hours a day at LRN.fm.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free.
Okay, let's go over some of the stuff. Now, there's this weekend. Well, all right, let's start at the top. On top of Freedom's Phoenix, we have Paul Festival Commemorative Dime Card Fundraiser. Now, we did just 1,000 cards. Donna, can you get me one of those cards I can show everybody? And the, well, I can show you up here. You know, this is, I got a problem with my color on my one channel here. What we did is we created the dime card for the Paul Festival. We were asked to do that and as a fundraiser for them. And it's $10 a piece for these because it's a limited number. It's only 1,000 of them. And whatever we don't sell are going pretty good. We probably get rid of them by the end of the thing. And but whatever we don't sell, here, I'll hold this up. There it is right there on the camera. And it's a very nice, you know, and it has all the QR code goodie on the back and everything. And there's the cards. So Don and I, we spent yesterday evening, you know, last night, you know, watching movies or what we were doing, and just made a few hundred of these so we don't get behind. And we have 1,000 of them. And what we're doing is it is a fundraiser for Deborah Robinette and company working on the Paul Festival. And I haven't talked. Remind me to call Deborah. See, go ahead and schedule her to come on, and let's go ahead and talk about the Paul Festival. It's time to do that. And so what we'll do, Donna will get hold of her today, and she's been really busy doing a lot of different things. But I'm really interested in how it's going behind the scenes, especially after every chance the campaign gets, Benton and Weed and these guys just, you know, doing everything they can to diminish anything that people want to have any impact on any of their politics in doing anything. It's wow. Wow. And what role does Dr. Paul have in that? So I'm really concerned how, and I just can't muster up enough give a crap to go. I really can't. And whatever we have left over, we'll go ahead and produce all that we have, and we'll send them to Tim Fry. And I'll go, hey, Tim, you know, whatever we got left over, here's the cards, and you know, we'll, this is the cut that we did with them. Go ahead and sell them. And you just hand, you know, the money, the additional profit over to the festival and, you know, co. You know, whatever you don't sell, hell, you know, they're mine. So, co. So I'm going, all right, well, that's what's going on there. And I want to get through this because then there's another batch of cards we want to do to finish off for Michael Nystrom for Daily Paul. I got to write this down. I keep forgetting to make the appointment with the electroplater. Gold plating of silver dimes. What we're doing is, you know, it's Peace, Gold, Love, P-A-U-L, you know, Daily Paul. We're going to have one that the gold one, we thought of actually using gold, and it's just, they want us, it's like $30,000, $40,000 to get the scale down to doing the where it's competitive, blah, blah, blah. That's not going to happen. So we're going to go ahead and gold plate some of the silver dimes, and those will go into the gold card. And we're going, how can we do the gold? I'm going, heck, we'll just gold plate the silver. Yeah. So I'm like, all right, cool. So we're thinking that. You know, I just got to make the appointment to go talk with a guy on that. So we're going to, you know, I got to remind myself. All right, so done. So we'll go ahead and get that. And I knew there was something. I'm going, man, there's something yesterday. I know there's something on my list I didn't do. And that was it. And I'm glad I remembered that. So we're going to go ahead and get those done. Because as soon as the Paul Festival is done, are we done yet? Are we done with this? Are we done? Well, here we got, you know, Mark Victor running for U.S. Senate, so that might get us, you know, be creative a little bit. But I'm for, you know, he wants to play and have and get, and I'm going, you know, that's work, man. I'm not justifying their, you know, legitimizing their crap. You know, I just want an excuse to put up a bunch of signs and be a butthead. I don't want to fill out paperwork, you know. So he hired campaign manager, somebody I suggested that could do that for him, and one less thing I got to do. But, you know, that still comes back. Yeah, but Ernie, we thought, you know, fine. So I'll do what I can to help with different things. But, you know, it's my main goal is just to make sure he qualifies, gets on the ballot for the general election. And we've done this, you know, forever. You know, I've been doing, that's why I run for most of my stuff anyway, was just to be able to inject, you know, into the bone marrow, you know, some libertarianism to infect everything. And that's what we do. Now, at the top of Freedom's Phoenix, again, you'll see here, we have a pool party. We've been gone most of the summer, so we haven't had an opportunity to hardly go swimming, much less have a party. And last year, we had lots of parties. We were having a good time. So this year, we, you know, they've been fewer, but still quite a bit. Well, we have this weekend, we want to just have a pool party, we come over and chill, get away from the heat. And then next weekend, we have some close friends that came. I want to tell you this story. This is interesting, you know, people you meet. When I first started being active, one of the people, it was a lot of people just started. I, you know, the Libertarian Party was small. There were, when I became county chairman, there was only 2,500 registered Libertarians. By the time, you know, a few years later, after I left, just in Maricopa County, there was 10,000. Okay, and statewide, I guess like 15,000-20,000 now. Why? You know, no, why? I mean, there's no benefit. You're not going to get elected. Your guy's not going to get elected. You've got, you know, people that, you know, become libertarian. It was a philosophical decision. And then, you know, the joke, the riddle, you know, the difference between an anarchist and a libertarian is about two or three election cycles if you're paying attention. Well, there's a revolving door. You may have 20,000 now, but that means there's like 40,000 that consider themselves libertarian that, you know, don't have anything to do with politics. So it's, I've seen it grow. And one of the couples that came in, and later they would get married, and it's an interesting couple. They're coming in a week and a half. They'll be, we haven't seen them in a few years. And they live in Indiana now, but they were the editors of the Mensa magazine. You know, Mensa is the, you know, high IQ club or whatever. And they edited the magazine. So I knew, you know, they're semi-smart. She is, Fran is a pharmacist. Well, you know, she works in hospitals usually as a pharmacist. And now, you know, she had a job in Indiana from here. Now they're going to Seattle. They have a young daughter. They're in their late 40s probably or something, but they wanted to have a child together, and finally they had a daughter that's about 5 years old now, maybe six. And so we get to visit with her, Athena. Well, when they were here and Kent was going to university in a philosophy master's or whatever the heck he's doing, he got his master's tonight. He's going for his PhD in Indiana and so on. He had a very interesting view of libertarianism that really kind of stuck with me. And he made the argument that, and he did a lot of the original artwork or the early logos that we did. He was, you know, Corel Draw. He was our, you know, page maker. I mean, our Photoshop kind of guy. So he had a lot of creative things. And one thing that he did when we first had 9/11 is immediately he created a whole bunch of posters based on World War II Nazi propaganda and America propaganda posters. And it's, you know, freedom is compliance and, you know, that kind of stuff. And, you know, and you know, for the war effort and whatever. And he did spoofs on it. And he was so concerned about it that he kind of, you know, kind of a little clandestine on it. One of them, he had a TSA agent, you know, that was in the uniform. It looked like an SS uniform, which you got more and more like. And it's Barney Fife, okay? And it's like, you know, there's kind of a spoof on a MasterCard commercial where he goes, you know, uniform, you know, $45. Shiny badge, you know, $10. Whatever, you know, instant respect, priceless, you know, and you have Barney Fife stand there in his TSA uniform in an airport setting. So it was, we really emphasized, you know, a lot of this artwork. In fact, we would make stickers out of it and everything, go down to the airport and put them on newspaper boxes and stuff like that. So it was, you know, it made him nervous. So he's very creative in a lot of this stuff and his activism, and he started to see where his real activism was in raising his daughter. A lot of us that have been around this a long time, we see the power of Generation Next. Well, I'll tell you about Fran when we come back. Not only is she a pharmacist, she's an up-and-coming science fiction writer and knows a lot of the big boys. And she's written a lot of, I've read her first novel, man, it was awesome. And it's yet to be published. So this is, you know, it's going to be nice to see them again, but they were a big influence on a lot of my philosophy. And the one thing that Kent always said is libertarianism is the method by which we attain the freedom that we would then deserve, because goals are left to the individual. Means is how you get to be able to choose your goals.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Okay, I'm prepping the news here. We're all gonna, you know, go over it. Yeah, blah, blah, manamana. All right, this is what I want to go over here real quick. I wanted to finish up the last hour. My friend Kent Van Cleve and Fran Van Cleve, they're, you know, very intelligent, smart, very influential in my life, libertarians that helped me understand a lot of things. And I want to explain this one thing. They're going to be visiting this next weekend. We're going to have a private party with a lot of their old friends and so on, and get to, you know, say, yo, what's up? And on their way moving from Phoenix, they went to Indiana. Now, you know, years later, to go from Indiana through Phoenix back to going to Seattle. So this is the one thing that I learned from him. Kent, in his master's thesis, he made the argument that freedom is the natural evolution of matter. I mean, not just life, but even, quarks and protons and neutrinos, they're all libertarian. And I go, okay, explain yourself. Well, this is what his explanation was. He was saying, as I remember, I mean, he'll say it's something different, but, what I got out of it, as I recall, he goes, all life and all even matter just wants to what? Keep on keeping on. Their number one thing is to, find a stasis, to bond the way it wants to find its, find itself. I mean, go off and kind of, be what it wants to be and maintain. It just doesn't want to just, go away. It wants to keep on keeping on, certainly life. And part of that is that, freedom is the most conducive to keeping on. If you want to control others, if you want to try and change it, if you want, your half-life is less. the point that he was making is that if your main priority, your prime directive is to keep on keeping on, well, you do what, would perpetuate that existence. Well, when you start going and screwing around with people and doinking them and taking and stealing and doing and whatever and violating the non-aggression principle, sooner or later there's a backlash. And so it would, of course, more deeper than that, but, and he made a lot better examples. But what I got out of his whole thing, he's going, look, freedom is, the freedom to make choices, the freedom to do things, the freedom, whenever you try to contain something, then you start having a cascade of other issues. You just let it go, man, be one with. So I'm going, okay, I can see that argument. That's cool. And then, Fran, being a science fiction writer and as well being a pharmacist, her thing was freedom's the answer, what's the question? But, technology was going to solve a lot of problems. And it brought up, I remember one of her short stories, I think it was published in Analog, and it was about the future of abortions. So somebody had an unwanted pregnancy. You didn't have to kill the fetus. You didn't have to kill the fertilized egg. You didn't have to, you just, sell it to, here, you want to grow it and adopt it out and whatever, knock yourself out. Or you want to do this or you want to do that. Then the question became, can you be forced to have a child out there that you don't have control over? Is it your cells? Is it your child to do with as you wish? Or because technology has given the ability for them to have a healthy baby that, you don't have to carry, it's not your responsibility, can you be forced to give up that tissue, that child? So these kind of questions, how many libertarians can dance on the head of a pin? I mean, it's these kind of arguments. And these were the interesting arguments that on libertarian email lists where I, kind of would, hone my rhetoric and, hear other, kind of we build up now to guys like Larkin Rose, man. He's got the arguments down. Bring it on. We'll go ahead and discuss it and have a whole bunch of people and we'll, get rid of your cognitive dissonance just by having the right questions and you get to, kind of heal thyself. Well, this had been going on. I found email list. It was amazing to me. Mid-90s, you go on certainly a libertarian-oriented list, very intelligent people, very, they were very tolerant of my spelling and grammar. And they go, I know they're amazed I'm publishing a news thing or something. Ernie, oh my God. I go, that's what spell checker's for. And I didn't lack for confidence. I didn't care. I go, yeah, blah, blah, blah. It's all very interesting. You know what I mean. So I spelled it wrong and used there, and there wrong. And, it's and didn't use the apostrophe. And kind of, I don't care. Answer the freaking question. So we would have these discussions and so on. And my friends were really cool. I go, look, man, just send me an email saying, what my grammar, hell, I learned more English from my people complaining about my emails than anywhere else. And what happened was there were raging discussions, heck, flame wars, on the idea that, how would you apply libertarian philosophy into everyday life? And a lot of it, I tell you one thing that really came up a lot. It was guns. And L. Neil Smith, you know, put it well. He goes, it's the Vulcan mind meld with government. You know, if you deal with the gun issue, you can see just how they see you. You know, either you're the sovereign or you're not. You're in charge or you're not. You take care of yourself or you can't. They want you to be dependent. They don't want you to be able to resist. They want, I mean, you know, the gun issue is such a touchstone with so many people. And they don't get involved, and that's why you don't see. You don't see openly them coming after what they had to do, the Fast and Furious kind of thing. They got to try and change public opinion, got to change the culture. They're doing it because they don't want to come out and get the gunnies all riled up because, man, you want to play politics? Here they come. That is a big deal. That is, you know, all little pieces of paper don't mean nothing when they come to start taking the guns away, I'm telling you. So they got to, you know, build up some other kind of excuse reason to do it. Whenever I needed to know anything about anything, science-related, philosophical related, some news thing, history, I just, you know, you word the question right, and this is before Google. Before Google. Heck, you know, they just started Yahoo. Who would you ask? What would be the search? You ask libertarians. Blah, 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 blah. Blah, wah, 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 wah. And they come out and they go, wah, wah. Boom. Answer. I found the internet amazing before the search engines. Because the people are the content. And if they don't have it at their fingertips, they can go get it and place it on and put it up. So during that bright time, that heyday, that enlightenment of the people, that was the intellectual involvement in my interfacing with Fran and Camp Van Cleve that are coming to visit next weekend. So those of you that are friends of Fran and Camp, please, you know, you're welcome to come over. And we'll be sending out invitations today and so on. And we'll talk about it after. And I don't think they're going to be able to stay. Maybe we'll do a recorded show and so on, because I'd like to get them on air. Because just fascinating people that I've met over the years. And a lot of them here recently as we go around with this Levolution thing. And the one thing I want to, you know, I'll bring that up. Here we got a story over at Daily Paul. Jesse Benton says, Dr. Paul will not seek to be nominated from the floor. Okay, and you were compelled to say that because why? Now we're going to find out when we come back, because I want to delve into this a little bit. It's just like every chance they get is to do the bidding of the RNC. Why? What? Why? I you know, Dr. Paul's thinking what? Because why? Why? I'll ask it. Maybe we get some answers when we come back.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government. The real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health, and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors of government propaganda. But now, there's an alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the ears has already happened. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
I found the button. I know how. I have the technology. Wow. Man, it's just, you know, I hate unhooking everything, because when you do, you got to rehook it right. You know, and that's just, you know, that's the way it is. Okay. Let me go ahead and read you the story of the Tampa Bay online publication of the whatever. And this is, I hate doing this stuff. I really do. All right, let me give you the spiel here. Jesse Benton came out saying, hey, man, we're not going to rock the boat. We're not boat rockers, all right? So I'm going, you know, why? I mean, I thought that was the whole freaking point, and that's certainly what, you know, we wanted to have happen. So, you know, like everything at RNC, who speaks is a matter of politics. Well, you know, who gets to speak and who gets to speak when and how and saying what and all that kind of stuff. Well, it gets down to, you know, yada, 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 and this guy and that day and, you know, whatever, and here it goes. One of Romney's biggest problems with speakers could be how to handle the Ron Paul movement. Paul's political philosophy differs sharply from mainstream Republicanism in key areas, including national defense, which Romney won't want to advertise. Paul has a small but dedicated core of followers known for taking on the GOP establishment and who have managed to take over several state delegations. Romney's greatest fear could be a movement to nominate Paul from the floor of the convention, which could happen if five state delegations line up behind him. But Paul, who's about to turn 77, is retiring after 22 years in Congress and three presidential races, may be seeking to hand off leadership of his movement to his son, Kentucky Senator Rand Paul. Really? Can't he do that? The RNC's announcement that Rand Paul will speak in Tampa, but with no mention of Ron Paul, hints at a deal between the Paul and Romney forces that neither side will confirm. A speaking slot for Rand Paul in return for convention peace. Ron Paul has announced he'll seek a positive, non-confrontational stance from his campaign during the convention, and even will snub some gatherings planned by supporters because his campaign isn't controlling them. Paul campaign chairman Jesse Benton wouldn't discuss negotiations between the two camps or the timing of Paul's speech, but said, quote, we have been told that it will be a very prominent time. Benton said by email that Ron Paul is not expected to speak, but that Romney representatives are working with us on other ways to recognize and honor Ron at the convention. Dr. Paul will not seek to be nominated from the floor, he added. So what's the freaking point? What is this all about? What? You know, all of this was to get, you know, all these people in the movement and everything into a suitcase to be handed over to the likes of Rand? Seriously? So I'm just, you know, you're still voting? So, I mean, yeah, fortunately, I know a lot of people are very disappointed, but, you know, I saw this coming before it even they did. I mean, before it even started. That's why I don't have anything to do with political parties. I don't play this game well. I don't know how. I don't want to. I don't want to get good at it. I don't care. It's not about that. It's about you and me. It's about the future. It's about understanding the philosophy. That's one thing Kent Van Cleve really made clear to me is that libertarianism is the means by which you advocate for freedom. The goals are left up to the individual. They go like this. They say, well, what would you do with your freedom? You know, you get freedom. What are you advocating? What kind of freedom do you want? What is it? And I go, you know, he would say, he goes, it's not about that. Libertarianism, the non-initiation of force. The method by which you would advocate for the freedom that you want to make your own decisions as an individual. There is no collective freedom. You know, there's no central plan for freedom. You know, that's Mark Victor's terminology I ripped off. So this is, you know, as time goes on, we start to understand, you know, what the real battle is for. The non-aggression principle, thou shalt not aggress. I'm not going to use force or fraud to take from or, you know, be a master of slaves and all this kind of. This concept, what it does is it gives you the method by which you advocate for freedom, and the goals that you would have for individuals is left up to the individual. I'm going to tell you what to do with your freedom. It's just, hey, I'm not going to bother you. Do what you want. Yeah, but you should. Well, what? That's a moral thing, man. Go to church, you know? But it's when, oh, well, people aren't being more. They're not, you know, they're. I give you the, I tell this story every now and then, you know, so it's not new, but I you know, it's been a while since I told it, and it's of interest anyway. It involves sex, so got your attention. All right, here we go. It was called the Arizona Center for Public Policy, and it was done, run by a Christian right kind of guy, whatever, this guy named Len Munsell. You don't hear much about him anymore because this was all building up a database for him run for governor in 96. And it was, you know, Hess ran up against him, too, and he was – you. I know a lot of the Christian right were disappointed because he wasn't really a good candidate. He wasn't good at it. He's just, you know, Christian, unrun Christian, soldiers and Christian. And it just didn't – it didn't play well. And they had a pamphlet that they would send to the churches, and it went like this. It had a questionnaire, and it had probably, I don't know, less than 20, probably more than 10 questions, so it averaged in the teens somewhere, and it would say, don't you think that, I mean, it was very leading, you know, don't you think that there should be controls on this and outlaw that and mandate this, that which is not forbidden is required kind of stuff. And you go through it, and it was just so weighted so obviously that, you know, libertarians, we would complain about, we would take, you go to my web pages when I was running for office, it got so bad that finally I just took it, put the questionnaire on my website, and I would answer fully each one of the questions. And I go, this is why this is a stupid question, it's why these are stupid answers, and this is, you know, just exposes, you know, how stupid they are, because they're just being stupid. And one of the things on there one time was adult sex clubs, you know, social clubs, they called them. And I'm sure they still have them here, whatever. They'd advertise them, and they'd do stories on them out of the New Times, the weeklies, and whatever. Oh, it's like going and watching your parents have sex or whatever. So, and that wasn't even the point. The point was, I'm going, you know, I thought Christ went to the brothels and stuff. That was a target-rich environment. I mean, you want to go out on the sidewalk, pass out, whatever, I don't care. You know, there are people over there having sexual relations in and out of, and because and kind of the structure of the family, they're not, and kind of, and we got to go get them. And I, you know, I'm in church, and they go, Ernie, what are you a libertarian? Got to get my opinion. They just have, you know, it's not like I'm, you know, keep it too far underneath the, you know, the skin there. I mean, I'm ready to share my opinion, but it was just, I'm going, wow. You are so damning of individual behavior, what they do with their freedom, that you're advocating for people not to be free because you want control over to make them to behave the way you want, and you say you're for freedom? You know, it's conditioning at every level. We'll go over some more.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Yep. Uh-huh. I want you to listen to something. This is a... just a couple of minute segment from Alice's Restaurant. And this is kind of the, you know, I just know this is coming to the delegation. You know, this is, you go to the RNC and it's going to be this kind of, you know, robot. This is what you're going to do and how and brainwashing, whatever. And on today's archive, if you go to today's show, which is, what is today? It's August 14th. And Tuesday, August 14th, you go there and you'll see in the second hour, Bob Anderson, a friend of mine, he wrote I mean, he rarely writes. I mean, for him to do it, he must really have had something to say. And he wrote this to the delegates going to Florida. And he says, you know, you got to practice disaffiliation. I mean, you don't got to be disruptive. You don't got to do anything. And heck, you know, got a gun to your head, you know, cast your vote for Romney, whatever. He goes, you know, but at the very least, certainly on national television, you just can't be in support of all this crap. So you need to do the Klingon thing, you know, disaffiliate. You know, just stand up and turn around. Just turn your back to Romney when you speak. Just stand up and turn around. You get all the Ron Paul supporters to just stand up and turn around. Wow, that would have an enormous effect on, we're just not buying, you know, whatever, doesn't matter what they, what, you know, turn her back. So that was, that's powerful. That would have a big impact. But here's just a couple of minutes from Alice's Restaurant. I mean, you know, this mindset, we haven't even been talking about all the wars. You know, what do you think they're going to do? Oh, it's going to be Islamo, you know, Iran, Israel, Israel. We're going to kick, you know, Iran's butt, Iran, Israel. And I'm just, you know, wow. And we haven't even got to the warmongering yet. The economy is going to go. The dollar is going to go. And they're going to be, you know, flashy objects, shiny objects over here, distraction. You know, it's going to be about war. I just know it. I can feel it coming.
Got a building down New York City. It's called Whitehall Street, where you walk in and you get injected, inspected, detected, infected, neglected, and selected. I went down and got my physical examination one day, and I walked in and sat down. Got good and drunk the night before, so I looked and felt my best when I went in that morning. Because I wanted to look like the all-American kid from New York City. Man, I wanted to feel like the... I wanted to be the all-American kid from New York. And I walked in, sat down, I was hung down, brung down, hung up, and all kinds of mean, nasty, ugly things. And I walked in, I sat down, they gave me a piece of paper, said, kid, see the psychiatrist, room 604. And I went up there, I said, shrink, I want to kill... And I want to kill. I want to see blood and gore and guts and veins in my teeth. Eat dead, burnt bodies. I mean kill. And I started jumping up and down, yelling kill. And it started jumping up and down with me, and we was both jumping up and down, yelling kill. Sergeant came over, pinned a medal on me, set me down the hall, said, you're our boy. Didn't feel too good about it. Proceeded on down the hall, getting more injections, inspections, detections, neglections, and all kinds of stuff that they was doing to me at the thing there. And I was there for 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours. I was there for a long time, going through all kinds of mean, nasty, ugly things, and I was just having a tough time there, and they was inspecting, injecting every single part of me, and they was leaving no part untouched. Proceeded through, and when I finally came to see the very last man, I walked in, sat down after a whole big thing there, and I walked up and said, what do you want? He said, kid, we only got one question. Have you ever been arrested? And I proceeded to tell him the story of Alice's restaurant, Massacre.
Yeah, it is. I can see this mentality going on at the RNC. Kill. And then the other guys jump up and down. Kill. Anybody doing anything, they'll just start chanting USA, USA, USA. And so if a bunch of the Ron Paul people stood up and just turned their backs to him, what would everybody do? The other guy, I don't. They just stand up, but you still see the other people that are back. I mean, it's going to be coordinated. It's going to be, you know, onward Christian soldiers, armed lock, de la, whatever it is. That's another thing, man. I'm telling you, my kids. I had a unique position. My sister is Mormon. My whole side of my mother's family, Mormon. They're part of the Lehi invasion of Mesa from all around the freaking globe, coming here to Arizona and building the temple of and the Mormon. I mean, I grew up surrounded by Mormon, and my kids went to a Christian high. And I remember one time there was a basketball game, and it was a big basketball game, and all of a sudden a couple of the guys, boom, it's a big three-pointer to win the game. Yeah, well, they're Mormon. And I can't even remember, was it our guys that were the Mormons or the other guys? I don't remember what it was. It was became a big controversy that somebody, it's like, you slander someone, you know, it's like you call them, you know, the N-word or this or that or communist or whatever, but Mormon, you know, I'm just going, seriously? And they were wondering how this happened. How is it that you have teenagers where they, you know, they just get so frustrated they lose the game whenever they yell, yeah, Mormon? And I go, I know exactly where it came from. It came from the church. I'd be at church and calling the Mormon cult this and the Mormon cult that. And, you know, they're not really Christians and yada, 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 yada. And the very same people that go freaking out about Mormons. Oh, but he's not a black Obama socialist, De La Muslim, whatever the heck. It's just a game. It's a psyop. And these people just, I'm looking at him going, are you freaking kidding me? And I have these people that are good friends. They go, oh, we just got it. I go, hell, 3 years ago, you've been freaking out that they were Mormon. Matter of fact, in the last election, you were. So wow. Is it really got down to that kind of political discourse? I don't give a crap. I remember it was a big deal, you know, of course, I don't remember, you know, as a kid, but, you know, I through history and watching, reading and everything, that JFK being Catholic, big stinking deal. You know, who's he hold allegiance to? You know, the Pope? You know, we got a story today, you know, there's some whistleblower. Now's a good time, I guess, as any to go ahead and go to it. And what happens is, let's go ahead and push the button. Pope's butler, Paolo Gabriel, whistleblower or traitor? I don't know. It depends on your perspective, I guess. Well, he's definitely, you know, Sharon. Paolo Gabriel, a reserved family man and devout Catholic, worked, well, you would think so. He's a Pope's butler. Is the Pope's butler Catholic? Yeah, okay. Worked in Pope Benedict's private apartments in the Vatican's Apostolic Palace, serving the pontiff meals and helping him dress. Yet while tending to the man Catholics believe is Christ's vicar on earth, the clean-cut, black-haired butler became disillusioned with his church. According to an indictment issued on Monday in which the Vatican ordered him to stand trial. All right, here we go. Now, it's a Spanish Inquisition kind of stuff. You know, this is what a lot of people don't know is that the Vatican is its own state, its own country inside Italy. It has, you know, the Vatican is a sovereign state. It's its own kind of whatever. And they got their own, you know, like a worldwide banking. I mean, they got their money and all kinds of stuff. And it is, they got their own court system, too. So if he found himself in their court, man, he's going to stand, I don't know, they're going to burn him at the stake or something. They got a tower to put him in. Let's find out. Arrested in an investigation over the leak of documents alleging corruption in the Vatican's business dealings, Gabriel admitted that for some time he had been meeting with a journalist and slipping him sensitive papers, including letters to the Pope. He told the inquiry he never received payment for the documents, but felt he was acting for the good of the church and as an agent of the Holy Spirit. All right. Well, I'm interested to see how that trial goes. We'll go ahead and read this when we come back, you know, because does this apply to the presidential politics here? You know, who gets that whistleblow on them not being ungodly? Maybe you.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. Yeah, let's go ahead and go over this rest of this the article here because we can. Because this, I mean, you know, we don't dwell on a lot of this stuff, you know, but at least we put it up on Freedom's Phoenix to let you know that there is a controversy going on inside the Catholic Church, which might as well be its, I don't know, own country. It is its own country, as a matter of fact, and it's my favorite kind of country. It's a kind that's like everywhere, you know, the Catholic country up. Yeah, man, you don't be messing with the church. They all kind of serious about it, man. They get their own little assassination teams and stuff going on. They are, yeah, they're like their own flag. In fact, they got their own flag. They got their own, you know, leader. They got their own, and they threaten you not only with, looks like they can arrest you and jail you inside the church. You know, they can, they got a 45 to your soul in their left hand, you know. I mean, so, okay, so let's see where this is going. I saw evil and corruption everywhere in the church, Gabriel, the butler to the Pope, said in his testimony, explaining how he felt the Pope was not sufficiently informed of such matters. I was sure I was sure that a shock, perhaps by using the media, could be a healthy thing to bring the church back on the right track. By day, Gabrielle was a member of the Vatican's most inner circle, the papal family, possessing a key held by fewer than 10 people to an elevator leading from a small Vatican courtyard directly into the Pontiff's apartments. But by night, he was a different man, obsessed with helping root out what he saw as corruption in the church by leaking the documents to a muckraking journalist at meetings near the Vatican. To fathom the apparent gulf between Gabriel's acts and his appearance as a reserved and obedient servant of the Pope, the Vatican summoned psychologists to determine if he could be held responsible for his actions. What? Okay, I mean, like they care. The results were conflicting. One report cited in the indictment concluded that Gabriel showed no signs of major psychological disorder or of being dangerous. But another concluded the opposite, that while he could be held accountable for his actions, he was socially dangerous, easily influenced, and could commit acts that could endanger himself or others. So put him on the rack! You know, nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition! No, I'm sorry. That was not in the article. The latter described Gabriel as subject to ideas of grandiosity, as attention-seeking, and as a simple man with a fragile personality with paranoid tendencies covering profound personal insecurity. Gabriel told investigators he was in a state of confusion and disorder in the months leading to his arrest. The butler seems to have been thrown into a crisis of conscience by insights into the inner workings of the Vatican that he encountered in his work. He turned to more than one person to share his anguish. He confided in a man he called his spiritual father, referred to only as B in the indictment, and passed copies of incriminating papers to him as well as to the journalist. B told investigators he destroyed the documents because he knew that they had been obtained illegally. Yeah. Several people interviewed by investigators described Gabriel as a pious person and a good father, a discreet man held in high esteem by his acquaintances. The 46-year-old man who rode in the front of the seat of the Popemobile lived in a comfortable apartment in the Vatican with his wife and three children. The man who started out as a humble cleaner in the Vatican and rose to become the Pope's personal butler now faces up to 6 years in prison. Kept in a tiny safe room in a Vatican police station for 2 months during the investigation, Gabriel has been under house arrest in his Vatican apartment since July. It is there that he will await the start of a trial that could prove to be the most spectacular in the Vatican in decades. And I bet it's not televised. So this is, I mean, you know, one of the things, if you look at the history of the whole Pope thing, it's, man, damn. Wars are begun by these guys. You know, one of the things that kind of interested me, they call them dispensations. You know, Donna was, you know, brought up Catholic. Is that what it is? They give the, you know, special dispensation. You know, it's okay. You're murdered and you get this piece of paper and it's all right. You can make it to heaven. Whatever. I don't know. She never sought one. Anyway, so this is how they raised money. They would go, oh, y'all going to hell. You know, we'll sell you this. You get in heaven free card from the Pope for dead relatives. Abusive. You know, spouses, parents, bad, evil, whatever you want them to. Heck, in the Mormon church, they baptize the dead. I mean, they don't actually have to be there, but, you know, they do go through that process. And what they do is they go around selling these. Like the Godfather, you know, oh, indulgences. Is that what it's called? Okay, indulgences. Well, I remember the scene in Godfather 3, I think it was, you know, as long as you give enough money, you know, we'll, you get to go to, you done killing? Are you that life over? You made it? Okay, well, all right, give us the money here and boom and done, you're all good, you're square with God. So this is the kind of mentality that, but they're not going to have this open. You know, you're not going to have, you know, but it's just, it's not that I have any particular, all of them are that way. That's why there are so many, I give you so many examples of my participation in the church, and just I, 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 it's the same kind of cognitive dissonance, the acceptance of, you know, conflicting philosophies and truths and everything, and just get in line and be a drone that you're expected to be in government, in party politics, in the church. It's the same reason why I can't. Now, on Sundays, fine. You know, put Pastor Baldwin, Chuck Baldwin up there, and, you know, he at least knows how to spell liberty. I mean, you know, I don't, there's an enormous amount of wealth in the Bible. And a lot of people, they'll go, oh, no, it's all conflicting. Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, I read it with, you know, I'm not just being stupid, but there is enormous amount of human history in there, and motivations and understanding of different stereotypes, and a standard by which people are being held to, you know, for different things. And I tell you, the most common thing, certainly in the New Testament, it was libertarianism. I mean, I know you could pick out all kinds of whatever, but the main thing was, you know, is, you know, Christ goes in turning over the tables of the money changers, and his whole thing was, I am the fulfillment of the promise of the law, and all you Jewish lawyers and all you guys and the Pharisees and Sadducees, Republicans and Democrats, sitting here arguing over how you're going to carve up your piece of the pie for your collective little group, whatever, and you leave out the whole promise of God's love for the people, and I'm here to represent and against you and, you know, and next. And they go, oh, heck no, we got a cross for your butt. So this is, as you read this, there was an enormous amount of wisdom in there, certainly on a local, personal level. And Psalms is really good about that. Proverbs is really good about that. There's a lot of history in there and so on. There's a lot of weird stuff they don't teach little kids in Bible school, too. I mean, you read it straight through for the first time, you go, whoa, man, I don't remember this part. This is, you know, damn. You know, like death, dying, and destruction stuff. In the name of the Lord, of course. But, you know, okay. So I can see where the RNC, the reason I bring this up, is that it's the same mentality. It's the same type of a quest for your mind, for your acquiescence, for your participation, for you coming up and going, you know, I'm pays, onward Christian soldier, salute, kind of, you know, whatever. And I know there's some other controversy going on. There's something to do with Adam Kokesh and the troops and how they're going to be treated or not, and they're going out. And I just don't care. You're still voting? So, you know, go ahead and put Adam on there. Let's go ahead and have him come on. He can tell us all about it and why I should care. You know, maybe I care enough for him to tell me so I can tell you how much I don't care. But the there's all this politicking. And I've seen the same kind of politicking in church and the melding between the two. The Center for Arizona Public Policy, what it was just a perfect example of that melding, and it passed out in the form of almost like holy writ that you have this piece of paper to tell you what you're going to do, or you're going to go straight to hell. We have to go past this, you know, and get the essence of what I thought Christianity was, to be Christ-like. Witness, parable, you know, example, voluntary persuasion, education. You know, it's not initiation of force. You know, it's voluntary. And I'm wondering what's going to happen by the end of the year. That's why I'm feeling really good about focusing my efforts on and Ernie's future is electricity.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
be afraid if we are informed. You know, Donna's going to go ahead and schedule Gerald Celente to come on, talk about this Goldman Sachs thing. And he was on RT, and they did. I'm just going to play a minute or two of this and kind of what the issues are. The main thing is that what happened is Goldman Sachs wanted to, you know, I don't know, make more money. I mean, you know, duh. And what they did is they were going to their investors, people that would use, and they say, oh, we're just a facilitator for buying whatever. And they go, hey, man, now here's the deal, man. You got to get, you know, in on the deal. Here's the deal. Here's the deal. They get people to buy a bunch. And what they didn't tell them is that they were making a bunch of money on these very deals going bad. Buy this, and when it and we shorted it, and when it goes bad, we get to make a bunch of money. So the idea is, should they have disclosed that? Should they? Is that part of the? I mean, you know, it's a buyer beware. Is it a bad customer service thing? Is there a fraud thing here? Is it going? You should just freaking know better and don't deal with these people. Or I mean, you know what? Well, it gets to the point to where you have Goldman Sachs, the United States government. It's a revolving door or whatever. So Ezra Corzine comes in and he says, yeah, I know how to do this. We're going to take all this money, put it over here and doing this and got not supposed to, but we did anyway. Gerald Celente is going, hey, man, you took a close up to, you know, words to $1 million of mine, whatever, and you pissed off the wrong guy. So, yeah, did you get your money? So this is, you know, him commenting on this. But, you know, first is hearing, it's Government Affairs Subcommittee, where, you know, got one of the congressmen giving him what for. I'll just go ahead and pick it up in here, and we'll talk about it. Here we go.
Interest to your client when you're selling something to them, do you have the responsibility to tell that client of your adverse interest? That's my question.
Sure, Mr. Chairman, I'm just trying to understand.
No, I think you understand that. I don't think you want to answer.
There were many scenes like that. That was over the Abacus deal, where Goldman didn't tell investors that the hedge fund Paulson & Co. had helped choose the securities in the deal and, oh yeah, was betting against it. Speaks volumes for those securities. And Timberwolf, that CDO, remember that, where they hawked debt, including mortgage securities, reportedly that they expected to perform poorly. That gave birth to scenes like this.
You didn't tell them you thought it was a deal?
Well, I didn't say that.
No. Who did? Your people, internally. You knew it was a deal, and that's what your email shows.
We had to bleep that, but I think you probably remember that episode quite well. This was all enough for lawsuits and civil settlements with regulators, mind you. There was the $500 million-plus dollar one that the SEC settled with Goldman over the Abacus deal with. This wasn't enough to prosecute anyone, though. So what's wrong here? Is it the law? Is it the lawyers? Is it my frame of mind? Am I just seriously misguided?
And who got the $500
million? Well, let's ask Gerald Celente, founder of Trends Research Institute and publisher of the Trends Journal, because he has his pulse on all of this. First, Gerald Celente, thank you so much for being on the show. It's always wonderful to have you on.
And always my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Of course, especially on a Friday. It's a nice way to round out the week, although I wish I had better news to report than this story that there will be no charges for financial fraud related to the mortgage crisis for Goldman Sachs. So, Gerald Celente, really? The Justice Department couldn't find anything?
They never find anything. You didn't see any charges come up against John Corzine with the MF Global scandal. He can't find, you know, $1.6 billion. You mentioned about Goldman Sachs being fined over $500 million. What was it, 2 weeks ago? HSBC being fined for money laundering. And it's more than just the financial institutions. Just this week, Blackwater, you know, that wonderful mercenary firm that keeps changing its name.
Yeah.
They just got fined for selling arms, and they were fined again a few years earlier. You look at what's gone on in just this year, over $8 billion in fines collected from drug companies, from military contractors and mercenary contractors, from the financial institutions. You don't see one head roll. Mm-hmm. This is to call it a justice system is criminal. It's not a criminal justice system. You have a bunch of flunkies, a bunch of suck-ups, and a bunch of bureaucratic lightweights that keep swinging through revolving doors from government to the so-called investigation agencies and enforcement agencies that bow down to their old bosses and suck up to power. Mm-hmm. When are people going to see the truth? How many times do you need to read all about it? Mm-hmm. It's there every day. Look what happened in the LIBOR scandal. Mm-hmm. What, $700 trillion worth of dough being regulated, mm-hmm. rigged game? And what does Robert Diamond do, the former CEO of Barclays? Oh, I'm sorry. And he leaves with over $100 million. The game is rigged from top to bottom. You're right. The word justice, as we say, is being misspelled. It's J-U-S-T-U-S. Don't get caught stealing a sandwich out of a 7-Eleven.
Right.
Boy, will they pounce on you.
Right. I know. And just to show that contrast, Gerald, there was a story that a former employee of Goldman Sachs now faces state authorities in New York after he already faced federal charges, was convicted. That case was appealed. Now the state authorities are after him for stealing software from Goldman Sachs. It's like, don't you dare do anything criminal against Goldman Sachs. But if you are Goldman Sachs or an executive, you can steal from investors and you'll be just fine. Is that kind of, does that illustrate this issue we're talking about?
Yeah, the cops go after the low-hanging fruit. Let's call it what it is. Go occupy Wall Street. You see how tough they get. Mm. You know, be a small guy on the chain or a small woman in the scam. Boy, do they whack you down. But not if your name's John Corzine. Oh, and by the way, the law firm that MF Global used is attached to the attorney general and assistant attorney general's law firm. I mean, what are you, 6 years old? You can't see through this stuff? Look at one after another. Mm-hmm. The game is rigged. Look what happened about a week ago. Mm-hmm. A jury found this guy that the feds were trying to prosecute from Citigroup. And they let him go because they asked, I wanted to know, this is from the foreman of the jury, I wanted to know why the bank's CEO wasn't brought up on trial. I'll tell you why. It's very simple. They're better than us. Mm-hmm. That's right. They're better than we are. They make hundreds of millions of dollars doing dirty deals. We have to work for a living. We're the suckers. We pay for their criminality. Mm-hmm. And that's what's happened in America. And by the way, look what China is doing to that person. You know, they're ready to execute her.
Yeah.
And look at the Iranians that everybody hates. They just found four bankers guilty, and they're talking about executing them. Mm-hmm. That's what I'd like to see. I'd like to see some high-level executions going on.
Yeah, yeah. Is that what it's going to take? Yeah, I'm wow. How sustainable is this? Well, the math doesn't play out. It's not going to, you know, the dollar's going. You know, that with all of a sudden a bunch of people go to jail or not? What if we're just able to extract ourselves from it? We just go on to Lone Prairie and just survive. Power to the people. I'm going to keep pressing that one. It's 2013, man. We're going to be deep into it. They want to take out Ernie. This will be why.
We know you're out there. We can feel you now. We know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. We don't know the future. We aren't here to tell you how this is going to end. We're here to tell you how it's going to begin. We're going back to editing the next edition of Freedom's Phoenix Digital Magazine now, where we are telling the people what you don't want them to know. We're showing them a world without you, a world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries, a world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice we leave to you. Subscribe at freedomsphoenixeasy.com. That's freedoms with an S, phoenixeasing.com.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800, 602-264-2800. 2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
Drop the bomb on me, baby. Oh, they're getting ready to drop the bomb. Which bomb? No, they got, underneath the drone is a whole bunch of them. Let's see. Let's select one from category A, B, C, D. My sons, when they used to play video games and fighter jet and doing kind of whatever, they have the joystick. They even got a throttle thing, all kinds of, getting funky. And what they do is, you can see on the console up on the computer screen, they select which kind of doing kind of, and I got this, a Ram, a Phoenix, a Hellfire, a Sting, it's just a Sidewinder, Daylight, whatever. And this one does this, and this one does that, and this one, heck, that my kids even knew it, it scared me. So they got unlimited resources of whatever to come get, and it's always comply or die. It's always force. It's always, death, dying, and destruction. And they've been doing this around the world. How's that working out? Well, I guess it's not working out well enough that they're not developing to where now we got this anywhere on the planet, hour and a half, we go get you thing. And is that coming here? What do you do when that does? A lot of people, I remember, in these conversations with a lot of the American types, they're going, oh, no, that would happen. Well, if that ever happened, then I would, right. As long as it's going after the other guy, it's, they go after the gypsies, the homosexuals, and the Jews or whatever, and then you don't care until they come after you and nobody left to care. So I can see where this is, I just see it. And I'm just, can I survive it? That attitude came, probably... I bet you it was in the 90s still or something. A good friend of mine, he's all about going out in the woods, and he's not a big giant camper or anything like that, but he started going to what they call the Chiricahuas. The Chiricahuas is a mountain range in southeastern Arizona. I think it kind of overlaps into New Mexico, Mexico, around in there. And it was the mountains where Geronimo went to get away from the cavalry as they were doing it. And finally, he had to voluntarily... surrender to do so. They sent him to, Indian reservation in Florida, I think, where he died. And at least that's what they say. And what happens is he was able to survive in those mountains for a long time. And I think his surrender was, for the benefit of women and children kind of thing. So I don't remember. But I remember that he was able, until he wanted to give up, that he was able to evade the United States freaking government that wanted his butt really bad. And so my friend was like, Ernie, I can't believe you guys. You think you're going to get all gunned up. You're going to go fight these guys. You stupid. He goes, I just need to outlast y'all. I'll come down after all the dust settles and that's all mine. He goes, I just need to survive what's coming. So it got me thinking, and I'm just kind of, not that I'm just kind of callous and just want to leave everybody to rot and fester, but for me to justify to myself that I, just want to survive this thing and my family and so on and, maybe build a better future on the ashes of, is that we do our best to make sure people know what's coming. And that's what I've been doing. Now I'm just like, look, I'm not for changing it. I'm not for fixing it. I'm not for, being in charge of it. I'm not for my turn at the ring or lever. I'm not, I'm just like, look, they're going to start feeding on themselves. And it's happening faster than I anticipated. When you got the cities and the counties and the state and the federal all competing for the same resources on the backs of the taxpayer, and the only people that can actually just print money is the federal government. Who becomes the lender of last resort? Well, now they want to be the spender of last resort. And that's where Glenn Jacobs realized when he read some of the executive orders that Obama is doing in there, it gave him the power to nationalize entire industries. And he goes, here, Ernie, I want to show you this. And I read it, and I'm like, oh, my goodness, I see exactly what you're talking about. Because the problem was is they did all these bailouts. They gave them to the banks and everything, and they just, you know, just kept it. They said, we'll just wait till everything goes to crap, and we'll just buy it up again with the taxpayer money. And, oh, by the way, the money that they gave us, you know, was a bill to the taxpayer for our Federal Reserve guys to say, hey, you owe that. It's on the taxpayer. You still owe us for printing up this money that we gave to the banks to buy up all your stuff when you foreclosed. And I'm going, what? What? How is that? What? I mean, think about it. You live in a home. You get foreclosed on. That debt that was with the bank, they call it a toxic asset. The government, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, they buy that and say, okay, now Obama's your landlord. Well, then they give the bailout money to the very bank, not to you. You know, the government has the debt now. And they give the bailout to the very bank, you know, that you got the mortgage out on that they didn't get paid, that they paid 100% for. That was part of this toxic asset thing. They just said, you know, instead of it being market value, which would be a fraction of it, they were the ones giving out the loans. They were the ones that were being pushed a lot of times by politics to do this anyway. So they give them 100% of the money. They get their money back. They're good. We got all our money. Heck, plus whatever. And they gave us and everything. We got money. The government then starts selling this stuff in big, giant lots. That's just now starting to happen. You watch. This is going to be coming. It's going to be, you know, I remember in the savings and loan thing, it was, I think, $100 million lots. I mean, you know, assemblages of stuff for $100 million. I don't know how many lots it was, but, you know, it's $100 million. So they'll go in and they'll do the same thing. Well, the banks are going to be able to buy this up with the money that we gave them. And, oh, by the way, your children and grandchildren and you, FYI, owe that money. I mean, you still got to pay. You're going to extract taxes on to pay this debt off that you know, it was created in your name that they gave the money to the banks to buy up all the stuff for pennies on the dollar. And it's not going to go for auction one at a time like it was supposed to be. They're going to come in and put it in big, giant lots that you have to buy up $100 million at a time. Got it on you? So this whole thing is just wow, wow, wow. But it's based on what? The only way the local governments can get their resources is if they either tax you or they get more debt bonding or they get it from the federal government, which usually comes with some kind of you got to pay us back debt controls, we own you thing. But the big thing is that it's inflationary. It just makes all the prices go up. This is a spiral. It is unrecoverable. We are at the point to where it's getting so bad. Everybody knows it. It's just, you know, our crap doesn't stink as much as the euro. So here comes the money now. And, you know, and we can just go look at the 30-year treasury. You can see the prices that are going down of the money. Nothing makes any sense anymore. You look at the gold and silver prices. And as much as they go, oh, silver took a dump and gold's this, I go, you know, gold's still 1600. It's been hovering around 1600 forever. You know, it's going to keep going up. Silver's going to get stupid. So what do? You know, it's just survive this thing and stop putting your faith. If you can get any money out of your retirements and your 401ks and IRAs and all your other retirement, whatever, get any money, you know, loan against it, whatever, go buy silver, do it. Right after you get a whole bunch of food. We'll be right back.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
It's very probable. Madam Speaker, this bill offends my principles.
TARP.
But I'm going to vote for this bill in order to preserve my principles, in order to preserve this free enterprise system.
Paul Ryan.
This is a Herbert Hoover moment. He made some big mistakes after the Great Depression, and we lived those consequences for decades. Let's not make that mistake. There's a lot of fear and a lot of panic out there. A lot of what this is about is getting that fear and panic out of the market. I think the White House bumbled this thing. They have brought this issue up to a crescendo, to a crisis. So that all eyes of the world markets are here on Congress. It's a heavy load to bury. It's a heavy load to bear. We have to deal with this panic. We have to deal with this fear. Colleagues, we're in the moment. This bill doesn't have everything I wanted it. It got a lot of good things in it. But we're here. We're in this moment. And if we fail to do the right thing, heaven help us. If we fail to pass this, I fear the worst is yet to come. The problem we have here is we're 1 month away from an election. We're all worried about losing our jobs.
2008.
And all of us, most of us say, this thing needs to pass, but I want you to vote for it, not me. Well, unfortunately, a majority of us are going to have to vote for this. And we're going to have to do that because we have a chance of arresting that crash.
And being VP.
Just maybe this will work. And so for me and for my own conscience,
and being VP,
so I can look myself in the mirror tonight, so I can go to sleep with a clear conscience, I want to know that I did everything I could to stop it from getting worse,
and be VP,
to stop this Wall Street problem from infecting Main Street. And I want to get on my airplane and go home and
you
see my three kids and my wife that I haven't seen in a week, and look them in the eye and know that I did what I thought was right for them and their future. And I believe with all my heart, as bad as this is, it could get a whole lot worse. And that's why I think we have to pass this bill. I yield.
Oh, I rest my case. And you go, you know, it was funny. I watched, I think it was Daily Show last night or Colbert, one of them. You know, I flipped on, I record it, and I just don't watch it as much as I used to because just so do. But they had an Obama supporter up there that it said Team Ryan, the Obama supporter, wearing a blue shirt, and there's the black woman. She's up there going, you know, yay, Team Ryan. Then you had the one of the other guys, the Caucasian, the Jewish guy, whatever, wearing a Team Ryan red shirt. And they're both Team Ryan. Well, the guy gets up and he goes, yes, we're going to this and that and cut this and do that and smaller that and reform and whatever. And they got different graphics up and yay. Then the Democrat gets up and she goes, it says exactly the same thing with a different emphasis and different graphics. And, you know, he's going to cut this and do this and trim that and everything, you know, and it was exactly the same copy of text and but different emphasis from a different perspective. Yeah, he's bad because he's going to do this. No, he's good because he's going to do that. And it's just ouch quit it. And all of it is based on, man, it's just for the banks. We're going to rip you off and indebt your children and do it. You know, I get to be VP. Now, what deal do you think was made with him 4 years ago for him to do this and come out heavy? You know, Mr. Fiscal Conservative Paul Ryan, and then he gets to be the VP guy. So it's like these guys, they're counting on cable news to be their voice as opposed to the people going out and finding the truth with a push of a button. Now you see why they need to get control of this internet thing. And I don't even think that. I've long time had the came to the conclusion that it's just they don't need to really convince you as much as they just need to confuse you and make you believe that, yeah, you may know what's going on, but nobody else does. The rest of the planet is just too stupid to get it, and there's a lot of evidence for that. But I'm going, you know, if they're going to use cable news networks to do this, I don't know, they better get a bigger audience because it's not working, you know? All right. So let's go ahead and go through some of the news. I just, you know, pulled up some stuff here and just, you know, just random give it what for. All right. Jet skier breaks through JFK Airport's $100 million security system. A man whose jet ski failed him in New York's Jamaica Bay swam to John F. Kennedy Airport, where he was easily able to penetrate the airport's $100 million state-of-the-art security system. Daniel Castillo, 31, was able to swim up to and enter the airport grounds on Friday night, past an intricate system of motion sensors and closed-circuit cameras designed to safeguard against terrorists, authorities said. I think he should be given dinner and a bottle of champagne for showing us our faults, said Nicholas Cassell, New York Police Department veteran, blah, 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 blah. But instead, he was arrested, and it would have been better if you just drowned. I'm okay. That's just the way they roll. Bitcoin exchange sued for fraud. Now, there's been enough, I'm still interested in the Bitcoin thing, but there's been a lot of, you're trusting somebody else to kind of hold your stuff, and they, and all of a sudden it goes away. What do you do? Well, they said, we're going to, return everybody. We'll make sure everybody's made whole and what, and then they just sold it to some other company, and now it's in limbo and suits and kind of people and what happened to my money. So I'm, it's not good PR for this thing, but, I'm still waiting to see. There's better ways to hold on to it, I guess. So Bitcoin, we'll keep up on that. Now, this is interesting. No consent. Your child can be sterilized in Oregon for free. There's a shocking development in the new Obamacare contraception mandate that went into effect in Oregon on August 1st. Your 15-year-old, as young as 12 in some cases, child can be sterilized for free without your consent. Sterilized. Not reversible, but a permanent end to your child's ability to reproduce. Do you feel a 15-year-old is mature enough to make that decision? They can legally drive. They can't legally drive to a clinic to have it done or even legally engage in sex, but they can make a decision affecting their lifelong ability to procreate. And, as much as the argument is whether a 15-year-old can make this decision or not, that's a whole nother issue aside from that's for free. We're going to sterilize the next generation, and all we got to do, what are they going to do? Is it going to start being an MTV commercial on how it's better to, whatever? I see this. It's just, it's sickness, man. I mean, once you get government involved in this kind of stuff, it's like a bad sci-fi movie. Now, Max Keiser went on InfoWars with Alex Jones yesterday or day before, and I'll save you, but the stuff, but the punchline is this. We're in a financial holocaust. It's a perfect storm. Here we go. Get over it. Life sucks. I've got food. And you see symptoms of this, like this SWAT raid everywhere. It's happening. Police in Louisiana break into a home during a nighttime raid, terrifying two women and eight children. They promised to return to fix the door, but as of Friday, they're not going to do it. They go in the wrong place or wrong time. Police in St. Paul, Minnesota bust in on a family, kill the dog, ransack the house, handcuff three children at gunpoint, and force them to sit next to the corpse of their former pet. They had the wrong house. They still found a gun in the basement, which was apparently illegal under Minnesota law. The head of the family was arrested and is still in jail. They want us on their side. Based on what? Oh, judge keeps key documents sealed in Colorado shooting case. There's a whole bunch of stuff they don't want you to know about. We're doing, isn't it Thursday we're having Corwin on or something? Yeah, just, day after tomorrow, I'm going to have to bone up on all this, all right, it's been 3 weeks. Let's go ahead and find out what we know. I'm going, wow. See, you wait 3 weeks, it gets to be a really interesting show.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence of me, Ernest Hancock. Yeah, we're trying to hook you up with some other individuals, just wanting to survive this thing, and they're like, I don't want to be an activist. I don't mind talking, but can I wear a hood, have my voice disguised, not show any pictures of, where I'm at or what I do? Yes, you can. I have complete understanding. We're just, I just found, and a lot of people are in that situation. I understand, but it's we're in a unique position to where I had to make a decision a long time ago that I felt safer out front. I just out front. Ta-da! Well, if you don't have the resources, the ability to express yourself and have others that, like a criminal defense attorney is a good friend, a lot of other friends, people in you know, well-respected positions of we pay attention to kind of stuff. You may not be in the same position to where I can do what I do because, you know, they you know, if they can get away with it, they'll just kick down the door and do and shut up and here's the handcuffs. You know, all the men in black. And so I get it. A lot of people, a lot of times, they're like we looking at the stories here on the Agitator. I mean, there's just, they just kick in the door. Oops, sorry, wrong place. You know, the dog shouldn't have barked. I mean, you know, I am, wow. I mean, it's getting bad. Let's go ahead and just go through some of the other goodies here. Treasury. U.S. to lose $25 billion on auto bailout. I thought we were going to make money with that. The Treasury Department says in a new report, the government expects to lose more than, no pop-ups, expects to lose more than $25 billion on the $85 billion auto bailout. That's 15% higher than its previous forecast. In a monthly report sent to Congress on Friday, the Obama administration boosted its forecast of expected losses by more than $3.3 billion, almost $25.1 billion, up from $21.3 blah, blah, blah. The report may still underestimate the losses. The report covers predicted losses through... How we got losses? You know, I thought there was some kind of, you know, shares of and GM and so on. You know, how's this work out? GM stock fell 7 cents or 0.3% to yada yada. At that price, the government will lose another $850 million on its GM bailout. The government still holds 500 million shares of GM stock. Man, if that ain't scary. And needs to sell them for about $53 each to recover its entire $49.5 billion bailout. At the current price, the Treasury would lose more than $16 billion on its GM bailout. Blah, 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 blah. You know, why are they involved in this anyway? You know, how did this even happen? You know, that they're involved in, you know, winners and losers. Because remember what happened. When they did this, it was there were some dealerships, you know, various different, I can't remember which manufacturers, all of them that they got bailout with. And I think the only one that didn't take, I think Ford didn't take it, right? So they go to dealerships and they said, I'm sorry, you're out of business. We're closing. You lost your franchise. And you know how we know that? Because we're the government and we're in charge. We put a CEO in there and he says, and get over it. Now we got it. We pick this guy. Well, why that guy? Because we like him more than you. Oh, and by the way, you know, we got FEC reports, all them Republicans you've been giving money to. Ah, sucks to be against the government, you know, when we the government. So I'm just, you know, wow, this is just, it keeps getting, you know, it's like a bad B sci-fi movie. All right. Yeah, so there we go. Okay, military asset forfeiture. There's a scary thing right here. The Department of Defense Criminal Investigation Service, the DCIS. So this is Defense Criminal Investigation Service. Yeah, I didn't know that the Department of Defense had a criminal investigation service. Now has the ability to use federal asset forfeiture and, quote, equitable sharing provisions to seize and forfeit property. In order to gain sharper teeth in its investigations and prosecutions, DCIS, which is Defense Criminal Investigation Service, added something more to its arsenal in 2007. A memorandum of understanding outlining basic functions and guidelines of DCIS's participation in the Department of Justice's asset forfeiture program was formalized on May 25th, 07. Before this memorandum of understanding became official, DCIS could only seek civil judgments and settlements for large sums of money as some form of financial punishment. Assets being sought for forfeiture by DCIS are entered into DOJ's Consolidated Asset Tracking System. Bottom line, the military now can take your goodies and say, yeah, you know, it's a civil asset. It's ours now. I'm dumbfounded. You know, well, what did you think was going to happen? They can start doing, you know, renditions and detentions and come get you isms and put you off to be tortured and whatever and waterboard and kind of, no, by the way, we get your stuff. How is this not Nazi Germany? How is this not fascism, totalitarianism, you know, whatever ism we get to do what we want ism? You know, and then when you highlight this kind of stuff, what happens? You get found guilty. 3 counts of felony wiretapping, public oaths they put here. Adamo Miller. Damo Freeman, Adam Mueller, guilty on three counts of felony wiretapping today, meaning he will spend 3 months in jail. Mueller is already serving a 60-day sentence for an unrelated incident, you know, for chalking and all this other stuff. So this sentence will likely be tacked on. So Adam is in jail because, one, he's resisting arrest, which was he didn't cooperate. He just went limp or whatever. Hey, man, that's resisting. You're not helping, you're resisting. You know, it was about the chalking, you know, in front of the police thing. Then there was a kid that got beat up by an on-campus campus cop, and they got it on videotape in somebody's smartphone, and he put it up. And he also called the school and some school officials and the police and, you know, hey, I'm recording this for whatever. And then he put that up, wiretapping. Felony, getting rid of this crap. Copblock.org, yeah, we got you on a list. So here we go. So what do we do with this? I mean, you know, I got my opinions, but, you know, it's dead, you know, done. So we'll have, Don is trying to get hold of Pete Iyer to come on, and we can talk about it, and we'll get all the skinny. But, I mean, you know, there's an after party of all this. I, you know, just want to be left alone. Lou Rockwell suggests that Ron Paul will appear via recorded, edited video at the RNC. Okay. Is that how he wants to roll? It's brilliant politics for the Romulans to substitute a YouTube at their convention for an appearance by the real Ron Paul. That way, they control the Ron who will be seen in their ongoing attempt to co-opt the Ron Paul movement into Neocon Party 2. The video will talk about Ron as a wonderful family man who delivered 4,000 babies, a long-term fighter for lower spending, a balanced budget, and Fed transparency, just like Romney and Ryan, a great congressional baseball player and a super and heck of a guy. Austrian economics, war, interventionism, the CIA, militarism, the police state, corporatism, torture, concentration camps, sound money, sound banking, secret arrest and imprisonment. What are those? Oh, and Ron, the final message will be, don't let the door hit you on the way out. There'll be some kind of, you know, yeah, you know, Ron, good guy and power and peace and glad you did and whatever. But in the end, they're not going to talk about the stuff that, you know, made him as popular as he was, what opened the minds of the generation next. Hell no, that is not going up. And they're not going to, you know, cause a ruckus. They're going to, you know, yeah, my son Rand gets to speak, and he endorsed Ron. Yeah, I'm just like, you're still voting? So as much as I, you know, support Ron as being a very good representation, I mean, the campaign and these, I couldn't get far enough away. And this is exactly why. Ew. Okay, Fast and Furious bombshell explodes. According to a high-ranking Mexican drug cartel operative who is currently in U.S. custody, there are some things that the American people are not being told about Fast and Furious. Duh. We obviously knew something was not being told behind the scenes because of Barack Obama issuing executive privilege and Holder being in contempt of Congress for failing to comply. But this makes even the sleepiest of people perk up their ears and pay attention. Go up to Freedom's Phoenix and look for Fast and Furious Bombshell Explodes and get, yeah, you know, it's all starting to come out. Will it all get out before the election? Yeah, who cares? They control the dials anyway. You know, this is such, I'm tired of the game, man. Power to the people. Let's just all start doing our own power. Then we got a story about YouTube is going to terminate YouTube accounts, certainly Alex Jones, for criticism of their copyright policy. So this is, you know, it's just, they're tightening the noose. You wonder, when is it time to get out of Nazi Germany?
I don't know.